Blog Talk Radio.
Conversation on the nature and growth and inspirations of things Masonic, and try and connect a few ideas with the questions that arise. I think it's, to tell you the truth, if every time I went to a lodge as a Mason and had to have a serious thought, I'd probably run away screaming to the nearest pub. Sometimes they're appropriate when you're having that kind of conversation, but I think, you know, it's we just live in unique times, as a man has always done. Every time every period of life is unique to itself. It's a moment, and it passes very quickly. And the definitions have changed. The definitions of authority and respect, authenticity, commitment, it's all changed. And the landscape has changed. The environment changes. Was I to cling on to my rural roots in Prince Edward Island or move out of necessity and find, roots in another area, create the family, and bringing the values that I was raised with me. And fortunately, as any of you know who have been able to visit that part of the world, the values are wonderfully influenced by and compatible with Freemasonry. There's an honor and dignity to the area. And because I was born there, it's also quite beautiful, and the people are lovely. But Masonry is what it is today because of where each one of us has come. Each one of us has a unique history, and that's always been the case. So I think you're going to enjoy the commentary today, and I hope that's what's brought you to us. Absolutely overwhelming. I'm going to just to give you a bit of an idea. We have listeners coming in, and I want a shout out to our listeners in Brazil, in India, and France, particularly United Kingdom. I'm presuming that is Scotland and Russia. Thank you very much, of course. The United States, a close second to Russia, but the lion's share of our listeners here comes from my home country of Canada. It's there's this little tiny, that's part of Russia here. I'm just looking at the map of our listeners, and there's a reach. I have to, perhaps be concerned about Africa. We don't have listeners from Africa right now. I'd like to have listeners in all of the continents, but I see, Greenland is this huge, huge place, and to think that there may be a Mason or people with Masonic inclination there that would, be interested in this kind of conversation. Or a shout out. The folks in Malaysia or New Zealand, you know, Indonesia, are amazing. But you know, to think that we have listeners in South Korea, by the way. Yeah, not many, but we have a few. I'm thinking that it's not about the us here, Masonic Effects or the production. It's about, I think, it speaks strongly to the values that we're talking about here, week by week. It's just compelling. I'm sitting here on the third day of September in this part of the world. We're facing the autumnal equinox, or here on the 22nd of September. It's going to happen here at 16:02 hours on a Friday. To our southern listeners, that will mean, in the southern hemisphere, that will mean that they're going to be embracing spring, right? Odd little thing, these calendars. Odd. And it even has to do, the oddity even springs up in the naming of the months here. The month here is known as September. But we're operating on a Georgian calendar. So if you're wondering what's the first day, well, using the meteorological calendar, then today, you know, September 1st, and ending November 30th is autumn, fall. Our Georgian calendar is based on lunar movements. It doesn't take into account the Earth's rotational axis in relation to the orbit of around the sun. But this means we need both a meteorological autumn based on the calendar months and an astronomical autumn based on the Earth's orbit and proximity to the sun. Oh, you might add, when is the start of the astronomical autumn? Well, that simply is seasons. We still have four seasons, but they vary each year. Different dates and totally vary in length depending on the Earth's tilt on its axis. 23.5 degree tilt, yeah, which is kind of interesting as well, and its orbit around the sun. So you know, we're coming up equinoxes when the sun is just over the plane of the circumference of the Earth, and in that second, we're in balance. The equal and nox, night. So the date change, you know, so when you cross the equator, you know, it's that moment of equality. And the seasons are moving forward. Just as you and I and everything around us is moving all the time. We are so comfortable and familiar with that in a sense, we can talk to ourselves about staying ahead of it. We can anticipate a great deal just because things are familiar to us. But just as we begin to say that, there goes that sense of consciousness and awareness that makes us a little bit different from the plants and animals around us. You know? September, the ninth month in the year in the Julian and Gregorian calendars, and the third month to have the length of 30 days. So it marks the beginning of the ecclesiastical year in the Eastern Orthodox Church. When I was doing a little bit of research about September, you know, it changed. It used to be a different place, have a different place in our calendar. When it was, it's a throwback to the. It means September, the Roman month, seven, And it was originally the seventh of 10 months in the oldest Roman calendar. And in March, the first month of the year, until about 153 BC. So when you're reading through scripts and information referring to old days, just consider the date and examine what calendar was in use. Because there was a time when there was a big collision, and even today we have Orthodox calendars being used that don't seem to cause any complications. We have the calendar of the marketplace, and the nice part, I find, is the legacy. We've accumulated names and references, as we should, as any thoughtful creature would. So in the last first century BC, an extra day was added in honor of the deified Julius Caesar on the 4th of September. And imagine that, eh? And these dates don't correspond to the modern Gregorian calendar at all. In 1752, the British Empire adopted the Gregorian calendar. All hail the colonialists. And in the British Empire that year, September 2nd, remember this year, 1752, September 2nd was immediately followed by September 14th. So when my old friends Robert and John and Michael tell me that they have relatives born on the 3rd of September, 1752. Isn't that interesting? There's 12 days that don't exist. So you can play with that. I think that's kind of very, very healthy. And we have some lovely poetry today. I chose this because it was written in the year I was born, in 1949. Of course, it's a Boris Pasternak. It's called Autumn. I have no idea why that would happen. But to get into the program today, thank you all for tuning in, and thank you for the amazing support. We're going to get into some music that I hope you haven't heard. It's not that familiar to you. Some new stuff. This is called the Shake 'Em Up Jazz Band, and it's performed in New Orleans. And well, let it speak for itself. It's an all-women's group. Check it out. It's called Sugar Blues. Thank you. Selah. Something a little different on the program today. I had been reading and happened to studying some things about history, and I'm reading it, still plunging. It's like when I get a really good biography, I just have a hard time crunching through them. It's like I want to savor them. I need to understand them, and I read pieces, and I put it down and think about it and come back to it and put some questions to the audience of Masonic Effects. So, you know, that's where the writings of Machiavelli, I'm getting the sense this is sort of sensationalized, like most things. There are a lot of things in history, and the history is sort of bent a bit to fit the purpose of the observer. And on the other side, I've got the work of William Blake, authentic. It breaks down myths. It's sort of we want to play with things salacious and things mystical, and sometimes in the retelling they're embellished. The fish gets a little bigger with each story. That's all right. That's all right at the time. But when we're reckoning with history and we're trying to make sense of something, you can think that it's really disarming. It's almost impossible if we're dealing with exaggerations or spin when you think about that. So brought me to thinking, and I'm after the last couple of weeks, I've been reading more about more of the work of Pushkin, and I'm just flabbergasted. What I find sort of at times interesting is the reflection on the beauty that's around us, and masonry allows it, sort of endorses. It doesn't allow me. I can certainly, I'm a grown man. I can go about just like you. Go about my business and collect ideas and be influenced as I choose. And I like to emphasize the latter. Ultimately, I'm responsible. I've reached way past the day where, I was thinking that way because some politician said it was a good idea, or the policeman said it was a good idea. I have to reason out whether things make sense for myself and take responsibility for myself. An important frame of reference for me comes from poetry, and poetry and the classics and the literature and music were like black holes in my universe, and like mathematics, it was a place I wasn't to go, and it was somehow implanted that it was something I couldn't do. Now, you know, like you, if somebody's pushing me back on my shoulders and telling me, no, you're better off, and I set my jaw and dig my heels in, then I'm pretty darn sure that kind of determination is going to drive me forward. And no matter how, there may be barriers, it may be insurmountable in the moment, but I will prevail, just like you. I'm not good at settling, not good at that, just like you. So we always are striving for self-improvement. But I turn to the poets because they're able to express an emotion. And I think it's the emotion of the world that I live in ways that I don't always think. This is from Paulo Coelho. Sorry. You'll know his work just a famous writer. And if you haven't had the joy, just by all means, you're reading a Brazilian novelist's work. This is a very, very thoughtful and insightful man. Here's a few things that gave me that idea and helped me frame my thinking. No one can lie. No one can hide anything when he looks directly into somebody's eyes. Ha! Drew, you're lying to. Who is he lying to? He's lying to himself. Creating that separate reality. Where nobody else can get in. Nobody else knows. Whether it's that bundle of insecurities and neuroses and a devilishness, or do you just want to refer to it in polite terms that it's just private? Sometimes it's hard when we start to reason things through. It's hard. What glee is there when you begin to think that a lot of the turmoil around the world is the residue of colonial efforts, exploitation. They're justified at the time, but it leaves in its wake work to be done. It interrupted progress for a lot of people. And so today, you know, we have nations that want to impose an economic and philosophical and political history. They want to impose one. Disrespectful of the fact that different cultures and different peoples are evolving in their own frame of reference and influenced by all the things going on around. And just as we always have, they will pick up people, humanity will pick up good ideas and share them. No matter how the authorities try to disguise it and suppress information, the good ideas are always shared. Like the opening of the history of the world and the explorers. It was the trade between the sailors and the merchantmen that brought ideas and goods from other places and shared them. They chattered with people that they met. And new ideas came forward. And when we study, we've gotten over, I think we've gotten over, or large measure, that history is about power sharing or not sharing. When we look at the lives of great nations and cultures around there, the old cultures, we see some really significant challenges to our current existence. Imagine a leader so powerful that he was unchallenged, the Khan, and yet his captors shared their religion and their values. There was a discourse. There was a discourse, and we think of that as being based on his tolerance, but also we can say quite rightly his respect for new ideas. He's always looking for something new. Here's Paulo Coelho. Says, remember your dreams and fight for them. You must know what you want from life. There is just one thing that makes your dream become impossible. The fear of failure. So, head in the clouds kind of dreams? I don't think that's what this fellow is saying. Be brave. Take risks. Nothing can substitute experience. When you are enthusiastic about what you do, you feel this positive energy. It's very, very simple. And a shout out to all about impatience. Waiting is painful. Forgetting is painful. But not knowing which to do is the worst kind of suffering. Oh, I think you may have be onto something there. We want to get into the commentary today. Help me with this. What effect, what effort, a reputation for diplomacy? We aren't, I don't feel that we're, you know, sophomoric, that we can play, pretend naivete. I don't think so. We can say those words, but I don't think our history really reflects that. We're a fairly sophisticated group of thinkers. We have a remarkably sophisticated although, you know, we're not, this isn't about hubris, but what else could it be if we're saying, you know, we're the oldest fraternal order in the face of the earth? Well, I don't know that. I hear that. I hear many things espoused that I don't know. I hear them. But I think the strength of Masonry is that it's never been confrontive. The confrontation comes within the soul, in the mind, within the conscience of the man. If he thinks that if he's inauthentic, he puts on his regalia and performs and finds out that he doesn't have to, the expectations are quite porous. He'll find the weak-minded will find that he can surf along. Doesn't have to do very much. Doesn't have to contribute. There's another stream of people that are they find the intellectual currency of Masonry fascinating. I like to think that was the root of Masonic effects and what appeals to listeners. In that sense. This is an area where, you know, when we talk about it stimulates the imagination, because we talk about meritocracy, and we know, we're grown up, that when we're searching for merit, we have to balance that off with reality check, and I think that means we need to sharpen our perspective. And not become sort of not fall into that a slumber where we're just accepting what's going on around us. Let me just give you a sample of what I mean. 100 years of history provided us with an opportunity to answer the ubiquitous question. Hundreds of years of history. Are people capable of learning from history? We have a history as an order. And when I think about it, when you think about it, if we were true to our vows and our obligations, and we were students of Pythagoras, very little would be exchanged. This kind of form wouldn't exist. But there is... The safety of our chatter is that a great deal of the secret of Masonry is, in a sense, it's an odd word to use, but it's the experience. What's the secret about meeting your child for the first time? What's the secret about the experience where you say goodbye to a very dear friend? What's the secret? The experience. What's the secret about the greatest joy you've ever felt? Or the strongest conviction? Or what's the secret? Do you find yourself playing on weaknesses constantly? To what end? Get over it, you know? The mathematics, I can't do this. The learning from history comes when we can look at things, as I've said so many times before, in an unvarnished fashion. We take it for what it is. People, humans are audacious. We try to get by the best way we can. And from the outside looking in, it may seem quite odd, but does it work for the people? Does it work? Human beings in different cultures are not specimens on a slide, because they don't speak the common language doesn't mean that they are in any way inferior. We're just discovering new mathematics and geometry from the work of archaeologists that are changing the way we conceive mathematics. thousand years. Where's that stuff been? If we're that progressive, so where's that stuff been 1,000 years ago? We're finding discoveries that are revealing ideas and information, new ideas. I find that altogether refreshing. So the new idea, the new old idea about masonry, when we think about it, it's not about strengths and weaknesses. It's about the nature of the order. The nature of the order is a reputation based on diplomacy. Now, one only becomes a diplomat when you achieve a degree of self-confidence. When somebody is anxious, and we hear that in the media all the time, they're embellishing it to sell the product. They're anxious, and they're upset, and they're frightened and startled, and they're carrying on posturing, or they have that false bravado. Not necessarily a threat, just false bravado. If you have enough confidence in yourself, in your nation, to prevail, we don't need to be confrontive. I think if there was a need, masonry would be. Now, isn't that odd to think that we could speak with one voice internationally, globally? But in some ways, I think we do. We push back the veils and we see the essence of the order is quite similar everywhere, quite similar. Oh, not the minor chafing that goes on. Oh, well, you know, I think sometimes I find it kind of interesting that we put such value on things that are irreconcilable. And if you study what's regular and what's irregular, it's very odd. Oh, do we just accept that some authority or somebody else is telling us, making those decisions for us? Or do we examine what that thinking was so we can come to a similar conclusion, or we can understand the conclusions? Along that path, it sharpens our acuity. We begin to develop sensitivity and an awareness. How important are these values? This 21st century notion is, I think, different than I would have been in 18th century or 17th century, or in 5th century BC Greece or 6th century. My devotions have become secularized. My environment is secularized. And we must have come to the conclusion that this was progress. But I don't have now certain frames of reference. I no longer live in fear of scripture. I no longer live in fear of people, the clergy, no longer. I prefer a rule of law that's not caught up with a particular theology. I prefer that because history teaches us of the dire results when those two things, when justice and belief and faith are mixed. So I think, have developed a hybrid, a remarkably livable, breathable balance. And I think, and for me, that diplomacy of masonry is always the comfort. It's on a fulcrum between good and bad, right or wrong. But this is the man standing up on that balance beam. Is so balanced and so confident. It's like the artist in the circus that is not only able to do something very hard, but smiles and is entertaining. And we marvel at that you've mastered that fear. Well, masonry is like that. It's mastered that fear of the awkwardness. So there are perennial questions that will never go away generation by generation, which are reasonable and thought-provoking. The things that mustn't be said that are thought out, the role of women, gay rights, the role of scripture and faith. These are not simple questions. And for anybody to become muscular about them is absolutely ridiculous. I find those kind of folks a bit tedious, and I'm sure a lot of you do. I want to hear the thoughtful conversation, the thoughtful ideas that you bring forward. And we reason it out. And I don't know, it's not that I come up with my thinking first. It's like that's the end product of a reasoned debate. In the meantime, I'm not a skeptic, but I'm a student, and I'm simply trying to understand, and I haven't come to a conclusion. Now, that, I think, is that the diplomacy of a true Mason. I kind of think it is. Recall being what it is. I won't suggest that all history is accurate. History is rewritten. There is a caveat, ladies and gentlemen. If the question is it reasonable to apply today's values and ethics to history? Is it reasonable to that revisionists prevail? I'm reminded that the Greeks taught us about the tyranny of the minority. I am feeling uncomfortable because of what you said, therefore that what you said is wrong because of my discomfort. We've just had you see examples of that around you. You don't need to hear mine. You see those examples around you all the time. Now, those types of events may grate a little bit on me, may cause me to have an itch that I can't quite scratch, but they pass, and they help me define pettiness. Petty people don't amount to much. Their grousing and their complaints quickly fall into irrelevancy. And I think some of those comments are clearly spoken without thought of consequence. Again, the reputation that our order has is an awareness of the consequence. So it's not that we're ponderous, it's that these processes are challenging and they take time. We try not to be reactive. And if you're coming to these questions with 500 years of history, it takes a little while to sort through the library. And oh my goodness, it was the fellas from the Ottawa Valley that made me laugh one day when they said, you know, if you want to hear, you know, if you get two Masons together, you'll get three opinions. And I thought that was beautiful, you know. It's true, eh? So I always fall back. I do fall back on some rules of thumb. The work that the Greeks taught us about truths and opinions and how we can distinguish one to the other and why there is joy in the argument and debate when we're looking at opinion. The infallibility of everybody's opinion and the absolute joy of arguing our points, knowing that we are all on that fulcrum. But we may be influencing the person by adding new information. Until one day, he or she takes responsibility for herself and her own ideas. The finger pointing stops. If somebody's quite adamant, yeah, you're okay, you're right, doesn't make it so. But, you know, one of those irreconcilable kinds of debates, you are unfair and you don't acknowledge. Well, Masonry is compelling. And Masonry has a tolerance. In a way, it's like a great grandfather, the mentor we dream about. If you have an issue, say it. Don't bury it. Say it out loud. If you're unhappy, if there's discord, explain it to us. We need to be able to listen to you. If you're feeling in any way that any aspect of the order expresses disrespect, we need to understand that. Because that's an affront to us. Because we do make every effort to show respect, but we're imperfect. And that's not the excuse, it's the truth. And we learn as we go along, and the decisions that we made 200 years ago may not be adequate for what's going on today. So we need to communicate. There, ergo, the reputation of Masonry, the communicators. So as Dr. Margaret Macmillan has observed from a loftier perch than mine, history can and has been manipulated to serve an ideology many times. Examples of this are legion. I like to think there is a nobility within the fabric of Masonry that shows us the benefits of diplomacy when we are confronted. You may be inclined, as I am, to think a principled approach to confrontation allows one to influence outcomes to a greater extent than confrontation and conflict. Forever in a day, youthful exuberance has felt compelled to tighten the grip when pushed, convinced pushing back is totally justified. Yeah. I think you'll like this. This is Emily Bear. This is from a jazz concert in Germany. She's a little girl. I think here she was 13. The writer, the arranger, the performer. This came from her album, Diversity. It was released when she was 11. Quiet, Graham. That's her on the piano. Thank you. It, aren't you? I'm sorry. That song goes on for 16 minutes. That was her opening song at a jazz concert in Stuttgart. Still, you know, except for that insanity that went on in the 30s and 40s, still the artistic epitome, a gem for the arts and, an appreciation. Everything. Do we have to have everything homegrown? Only if we're a bit ethnocentric and boring. We explore, and some of the listeners have traveled all over the world, and we've seen the good and the bad and the ugly. But you can sit down, and if we talk, if I ask you, can you tell me and explain to me the beautiful things that you've seen? Tell me the influences on your taste for music. What poetry do you read? Well, if you haven't done it, there's no time like the present. Add to your book list. Biographies. Oh, yeah, try and plunge into Shakespeare. More fun if you're doing it in a classroom than with a mentor. But if you're tricked out with the access to the internet these days, you can do self-study courses. And it's... If I can emphasize anything for you and me and all Masons, be gentle about it. There's no competition. This isn't, a wealthy man's game, a child's game, where the race is to accumulate experiences. I've sailed around the world. I've climbed Everest. I've walked to the North Pole. This isn't a contest. It's your life. And if somebody else has to do that to build himself up, whatever his motivation is, or it's just curiosity. Every so often we find this odd, unannounced person that has done remarkable things. Circumnavigation alone on a sailboat. You can imagine doing it once, but to do it, six times? And to bump into this guy in a port in the Maldives, or Caledonia, the unspoken, it captures the imagination. What is it about these folks where these are the people that can't be bought? They can't be bought. They make their own mind up, and they seem remarkably content. And that is, after all, I think, one of the things that's most beautiful of all is finding that contentment, aligning our duties with our wants and needs, aligning that. Here, this comes from Coleo. I write from my soul. This is the reason that critics don't hurt me, because it is me. If it was not me, if I was pretending to be someone else, then this could unbalance my world. But I know who I am. Masonry opens up that door for you. I know who I am today, right now. But are you changing? Are you static? to breathe air. Well, we're always moving forward, aren't we? Toward the great unknown, to the next adventure, you know, to the, or when you're like me, I'm in the autumn of my life and enjoying it more and more. Gee, yes, I wish when I was in my 20s and 30s that I knew what I know now. A Masonic thing to say? I think it takes a little bit of diplomacy. So we're not overwhelming. And certainly I would never, ever suggest that age brings wisdom. It can, but I've seen some pretty stupid things going on. You know, those boys that seem to have a stranglehold on an idea, just can't let go. Sad. So when they die, progress sort of lurches forward and fills in that vacuum. But it's interesting because we have to put ourselves in a time frame that's beyond our own life expanse. And if you're like me and you think that Hegel's notion that history reveals reason, I think I think that I subscribe to that kind of an idea. Here, excuse me. Masons, you and I, say that the sun is always at its meridian with respect to the craft. So you've seen the motifs with little bees, the Masonic symbols. Yeah, for those of you who aren't Masons, you can certainly look this up on all kinds of locations. Now, think about that. The bee is an industrious insect. And it has some benefits for the likes of you and me. It produces honey. But when it's out there, it's visiting different flowers. It's never able to visit every flower. It visits, it takes what it needs or what's there. It fulfills its purpose and moves on. And I think the metaphor is kind of fun in a way. Playful and interesting. The Masons are the same way. For anybody to claim that all flowers are the same, it's like saying, all sunsets are the same. Well, no. Each one seems to have a je ne sais quoi. It's a beauty of its own. The being with the company of an attentive companion. It's never the same way twice. But if you close you squint your eyes, you can convince yourself that that's the way it is. The compass of masonry is vast. It's vast. And every day the busy bee gathers fresh store, and it's largely unnoticed in the world. Look at me, look at me. I want the big audience. It's the only way I know that I've made you happy. I've controlled you. I influence you. Nope. The bees go about their business. The aim for those less poetic is to render an impression of the extent and resources of global masonry, as well as something of its activities during the last 20 years or so. And undoubtedly, the part of the world that's changed the most during those 20 years is the portion of the world's tragedy once known as the Eastern Bloc. Though there was abundant Soviet communist tyranny in the North as well. So on the 27th of September 1998, the then Deputy District Grand Master of the Estonia Division of the Grand Lodge of Free and Accepted of Finland, with representatives of four lodges in that division, met in a fraternity hall in Tallinn, where they decided to establish the Grand Lodge of Estonia, petitioning the Grand Lodge of Finland to be Mother Lodge and to carry on the consecration and installation ceremony. And it eventually took place on the 18th of May, 1999, in the White Hall of the magnificent Gothic Blackheads building, built in 1538. Finland had established the first lodge in Estonia after independence from the Soviet Union in 1991. But that was not the first lodge to be established in the country. While the Tsars held sway over the Russians, Isis Lodge was constituted in Tallinn, the 12th of October, 1773. The Mother Lodge was Harpocrat Lodge, St. Petersburg. Later in 1822, Russia would ban Freemasonry due principally to the implacable opposition of her Orthodox Church. But across the Baltic and freer land, Sweden played host to the Triannual International Conference of the Great Priories of the Knights Templar in October 1997. And this is where it's interesting. The Grand Vice Chancellors of Priories from Australia and Canada, Denmark, Norway, England, France, Germany, Greece, Ireland, Iceland, Portugal, and Scotland, Helvetia, and Sweden attended. So we have something kind of interesting going on. It's sort of like, you know, when you see the, do you remember the first Harry Potter story? They have Joanna Rowling was playing with our imagination and making us all boys again. And we see the children, the new students, and their little boats coming up to Hogwarts, you know, the great school. And they're just, it's that sense of amazement. Now, it's been a long time since we were boys, but Masonry has, there are aspects of Masonry that have that kind of depth and that kind of influence. But you have to want it, you have to go and look for it. Anyway, it's been kind of interesting talking to you again today. And we're going to sign off with a little piece from a piece that was a little bit of jazz legato improv, and this is for a trombone and vocal, by Yevgeny Vladimirov and Denise King. You'll recognize the song. It's gorgeous. It's The Nearness of You. Vladimirov is particularly charming in this piece. I'm happy that you were able to join me today. I hope that you'll commit yourself to a Masonic charity that includes you, a gentleness and a thoughtfulness as you go about your business in the week. The world needs us to a great extent. Not muscularly. We're not weak. And we're certainly not stupid. But our influence is profound. And the world could use a bit of us right now. So enjoy it. I look forward to seeing you all again soon. She's a Belarusian jazz musician, eh? Jazz is everywhere. Who knew? Belarus? Huh? Who knew? Bye for now. Thank you.
You hold your